You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
Rap Genius.
Just don't listen to that record much. Not that I know that people relate to it. And I appreciate that.
Live from the Rap Genius Ranch at South by Southwest 2013, this is Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, same old Sean. I'm bringing you this intro live from the RG Ranch, where we've hosted great events all week that have brought through some of our friends and favorite artists, folks from Pro Era, Chance the Rapper, Large Professor, and on and on. We've also seen amazing shows, Kendrick Lamar, Ghostface Killer, Mayhem Loren, just too many to name, and probably had a few too many drinks in the process. This week, I'm bringing you an interview I did a few weeks ago with Brooklyn rapper Scene. Scene is really incredible. He's one of our absolute favorite up-and-coming artists. The world first took note of him, of course, with the album he did with Blue, A Day Late and A Dollar Short. His follow-up, Brooklyn Night, was really incredible and where he definitely came into his own. And he also has a ton of other projects you'll hear about. Recess, Denisha and Scene, all kinds of things. He's really a very, very, very talented dude in all sorts of ways. I spoke to Scene at the Rap Genius office in Brooklyn right before we left for South By. As always on Outside the Lines, we're bringing you annotated interview excerpts. Every time you hear this sound,
Rap Genius.
Go to rapgenius.com and search for Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. The very first result will bring you annotated interview excerpts. Additional audio, video, and information to bring you further outside the lines. And now, here's our interview with Scene.
Can you tell me just a little bit about yourself for our audience?
My name is Scene. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I came up just a little mixed breed Puerto Rican kid from Sheepshead Bay, which is South Brooklyn, southern end, right by Coney Island. And I just grew up running around there while, you know, I moved to California when I was 18, lived out there for 5 years, and then came back to Brooklyn, you know, after 5 years, and was just like, all right, it's time to do it at home. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I actually wanted to ask about that, because it really seems like at least judging by your songs, that like this defining event in your life was this move to California when you were 18. Yeah. And it kind of, you hinted at, in some ways, that once you got out there, things didn't exactly go like you planned. Like what originally brought you out there? What happened when you were there?
Well, I went out there, I had visited out there when I was 17. And I was like, oh yeah, I could do this for a second, you know what I'm saying? And finally I was like, all right, yeah, you know, I'm gonna head over there and see what it's about. So I stayed for like a month and I was like, yo, I need to change. Like, no one's doing anything positive back home. Like, I'm just gonna keep getting in trouble. I'm just gonna keep getting caught up. It's just gonna get bigger and bigger, not smaller and smaller. So I was like, now would be a nice time where I could feel like I could cut, where people would still give me the respect of like, all right, he's just going to do his thing right now. And so I was like, you know, if I wait any longer, then it'll just be stupid. I just gotta go. And so when I turned 18, yeah, I finished high school. And the day after I finished high school, I hopped on a plane and went to Cali.
Literally the day after?
The day after.
Wow.
Because what happened was I had screwed around so much in high school that I had to do summer classes. And I remember having a meeting, and really I was at my wit's end, like just living in the neighborhood and just doing the same shit every day. And when they told me that I had to do summer classes, I was like, well, I already have a ticket for July 29th, they're like, well, summer school goes till August, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, it looks like I'm not going to get my diploma then. So, you know, I liked the guy talking to me, very nice guy, but I was just, that's what I was, you know. was like, so I'm not going to get my diploma then. That's what it is. And I know that speaks bad for them as well, badly for them as well. So he was like, well, that's not an option. I was like, well, it really isn't. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, no, it really is an option because that's what's going to happen. So they spoke about it, you know. They brought my mom's in. And they're like, listen, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to graduate. They're like, do you see your mother crying here? Do you see that? I was like, I see that.
They're pulling out all the stops.
Yeah, they pulled out every stop. And I was like, I see that. And there's a million reasons for that. And I respect my mother, but this is what I have to do in my life right now. And so they worked it out so that I could do all my classes and then turn in a paper for some other classes and not do full courses. And they let me do all that. And I went and picked up my diploma. And then, yeah, the next morning I was on the plane. I missed my flight. I was hungover. But I waited in the airport for 4 hours. Yeah, I ended up sitting next to David Lee, who was a New York Knick for a long time. But at the time, he was in college. And we were just two kids, like, hey, I'm going to start a life. And he's like, hey, I'm trying to chase this basketball dream. I'm like, hey, I'm, you know, kind of in the middle of deciding what I'm doing with this music dream. And he was like, yeah, you know, it's cool. Maybe one day I'm on my way to Jordan camp. And I was like, yeah, good luck with that, man. He was like, yeah, you too. Good luck with it. And, you know, now he's fucking NBA player and shit. Seen him on TV, like, oh shit, that's the kid I was on the plane with.
Yeah. And so once you got out there, what happened?
Once I got out there, it was a whirlwind. I had found out that some stupid nonsense that I got caught up in over here prevented me from getting financial aid and student loans. So it immediately pumped the brakes. And I'm out of state. So I have to pay out of state.
Out of state tuition.
And so it completely pumped the brakes. It was like when I got that letter, I remember just being like, oh my God, what am I about to do? And I didn't have, you know, parents to pay for, you know, college tuition and stuff like that. And so I was just like, all right, well, it's time to get a job, I guess. You know what I'm saying? And I had told myself, like, all right, you know, rapping was cool, but I'm kind of leaving that with all the Brooklyn stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I had moved next to some kids that were really into music. They heard me looking for weed one day. And someone came knocking, like, yo, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to intrude, but I heard you're looking for weed, and I could probably hook that up. And then he's like, hey, are you
thinking, you beat all your best producers.
Yeah, you know? But no, he's like, yo, are you the kid that's been bumping Big L? And I was like, yeah. He was like, oh, man. I was like, who the fuck is that? Barbara knows Big L. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And so we just, you know, started talking or whatever. He's like, yeah, my roommate's a producer. I host his college radio show. And then the next day, I was out there rapping on the balcony, writing a rap or something. And another kid that I hadn't met was like, yeah, what are you working on over there? I was like, I'm just writing some stuff. He's like, oh, so you the new kid from Brooklyn? I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, I'm the producer roommate kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they're all Asian kids. All like Korean and Chinese. And I was like, yeah, let's I'll check out some beats right now. And that became my first producer I ever worked with. Now he's killing the Chinese scene. He moved back to China. He's like at the forefront of the Chinese scene, and it's crazy. Our other roommate ended up becoming Snoop Dogg. Our other next door neighbor became Snoop Dogg's on-site manager, still does that. The other homie ended up managing the homie Blue, and then Exile, and then a whole bunch of people since then. And Jeff's now at the forefront of the Chinese scene. It's pretty crazy, just like four apartments, and everyone's doing some crazy stuff now. So it just changed my whole life, basically.
That's amazing. And then at a certain point, you came back to Brooklyn, I think after about 5 years or so.
Yeah, 5 years, and I was back to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I just got a little bit tired.
Yeah, I hear you. And there was, you talked about that in a song here somewhere in my note, about how, like, coming back, oh, and Holiday. You said that, like, in some ways, Brooklyn didn't change at all during the 5 years you were gone. Like, what changed and what didn't regarding New York and specifically, like, your neighborhood?
Okay, cool. All the, I guess, surface things changed more so. Like, you know, stores, storefronts, things that were, like, of legend that you're like, that's gone? You know, a park that I hung out with became, like, a park that I spent, like, 8 hours a day in every day for years came back and it's like a football field. And it's like, what? Like, you know, that's like a big, I still pass it, like, this is a few years now, I still pass it and look at it, like, just, I could sit there for a minute, like, oh my God. And things like that change, but then you realize, while you think that everyone grew up and got older, it's just different surroundings are changing, you know, a change in the backdrop, but it's really, there's no change in the guard, so the same kids are doing a lot of the same stuff, if they're alive and if they're out of prison, you know what I'm saying? So it becomes one of those things where you're like, oh, okay, the honeymoon's over. This really is back to what it is. You know what I'm saying? I was back a few weeks, got into a couple of fights, and I was like, I haven't had to have a fight. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got to one
not,
in Vegas.
Not so much of that unless it's over.
You know
surfboard is
yeah, you know, I got to like one fight in Vegas on vacation when this kid double palmed my homegirl's ass, and so I hit him. And other than that, I hadn't had a fight in like years. So to come back home and like in my first month have a few, I was like, oh man, what am I doing with my life? I was just like, all right, this is not what I expected when I came back, but I should have expected it when I came back.
Yeah. You said something about that sort of along those lines in Cult Classic, right? You say, like, I'm trying to rep the city I was given. And I thought that, like, was given thing was what was really interesting to me. Because not that many people, a lot of rappers have hometown pride, but not many people acknowledge that, like, it's kind of arbitrary where you're born.
Yeah, and I'm glad you caught that, because that's exactly where I was going with it. You know, that's exactly where I was going with it. You're given that, you know. I don't want to, I think it was Chris Rock, what he said, like, what, you think you better because you popped out a pussy in Detroit, you popped out a pussy in Afghanistan, you know what I mean? Like, excuse my language and shit, but that's really what it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I represent where I was given. I was given Brooklyn, you know?
So we were talking about Cali for a second and Brooklyn and moving back to Brooklyn. And it's like something, and I just can't quite put my finger on it, but there's something about this sort of current generation of Brooklyn rappers that I noticed some commonalities. And like I said, I don't really think I have the vocabulary to talk about what it is, but between like you and Skyzoo and even like younger kids like Joey Badass or something, I kind of feel like there's some sort of commonality. I don't know. What, if anything, do you think kind of bands together like Brooklyn, sort of this batch of Brooklyn rappers?
I think people just got tired of hearing that New York is dead stuff. And so it became less about shitting on people. Because Brooklyn's one of those places where I love it to death, but there's parts about it I hate. I would be lying to say I don't. Like, I hated that everyone in other places would be like, oh, they're from here, they're holding it down, they got a fan base, well, then I'm going to hold them down because that's pretty dope, yo. But here it was all about, like, oh, fuck so-and-so. They're from the same street, or, like, they're up the street, but it's like, oh, fuck so-and-so. For like, the most stupid reasons. I find myself checking people all the time, my friends. They'll be like, oh, fuck so-and-so. I'm like, why? Why fuck so-and-so? Why screw him? Why? What has he done to you? Like, what, you know, what is your beef with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that said, I feel like right now people are just proud to be where they're from. And the commonality is that we're Brooklynites. We love where we're from. We'd love to change certain things about it. But at the end of the day, we can't change certain things about what we've been through. We can only change what we're doing. And that's what people are doing. Bad representative now to the votes, you know.
Rap Jeans.
On Brooklyn Night, on the last solo album under your name you released, there's this big theme of traveling and touring and stuff like that. Were you at the, like, right before you made that, were you like on the road a lot and stuff?
While I made it, I was on the recorded half that record. I went out okay, so check this out. I had been working on a certain amount and I was supposed to go to Switzerland for some tour dates. And when I got out there, I had spoken to No Games and we were about to work on some music ourselves. And it got to the point, he was like, well, what are you working on? Let me hear something. And I was waiting for that, you know, because I knew we were on to a little something. And so I started playing this stuff and he was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. But I was like, he was like, yeah, but you got to do this and this. And I kind of played it dumb where I was like, oh, what do you mean, you know? And he was like, oh, man, this, this. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, we want to do this, that, and the third, and I want to do this and that. And he was, and I knew he had like 3 weeks booked solid, but he was gonna help me out here and there for other things and work with me. But he was booked solid, that studio and everything. And after he paced a little bit, he came back into the room and he was like, "All right, fuck everything I've just said. We're dropping everything. I'm mixing this record." And he was like, "We're gonna do it before you leave. Like, so we're gonna work on it from tomorrow on." And then I was like, "Well, I only got 4 records or something like that that I want to keep." And he was like, "Well, then we're gonna just do the rest." And so we sat there and made the rest of the whole record. And so, I'd be doing a show one night and then come back to the studio and then work on the record back and forth, all like that. But I was traveling while making a lot of that record. And so it turned out where I wanted to make the whole thing in Brooklyn. But I realized, I was like, no, I'll just make it as a Brooklynite in the world.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Rap Jeans.
Awesome. And there was something in A Day Late, that record, the previous one, was kind of seemed to be focused primarily on the past, about growing up, and, you know, Brooklyn Night, like we were saying, was about the present and traveling and all that. What was the change in focus? Was it just like the change in circumstances? Did you kind of burn out and feel like, well, I've said everything I can about growing up, or?
That's a good one. I don't think I've said everything I have about growing up, but I feel like I was very vulnerable on that first record. And I knew before recording it, before feedback, before anything, I was like, yo, people don't even know what I'm talking about with like doo-wop hooks or doo-wop-ish hooks and raps and like upbeat and like a very different style than like a regular rap, you know? And I knew it was going to be out there, but I didn't give a shit. Like, I was like, yo, this is my first record. It's got to be me, you know what I mean? And that was me to the T right then. I can't even listen to it really anymore because it's just, I'm happy that I was there at that time. But I sit there with a red pen like a teacher, you know, like, oh, I should have done this. And, you know, I shouldn't be like that. So when I say that, not only feel like, oh, I've stepped it up since then, but it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, no, that was a great place and an ugly place, and I'd rather not read. It's like high school.
Yeah.
There's things that you remember that were really dope about high school, you know? But you remember most of the time high school is shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Emotionally, yeah. Just like everything, all the bullshit, the drama, the everything. And so it's kind of one of those things where it's like that represents a time in my life where I was willing to be this really vulnerable person because I was in this vulnerable situation. And that's what came then. And once I kind of got a grip on things, I was like, all right, no, so this is what I wanted to, you know, shit was pouring out of me then, things that I've been waiting my whole life to say. And now I was more worried about how I was saying certain things and speaking about where I'm at now.
Which is where Reality Bites came in, right? That was a little more kind of rap, braggadocio,
yeah,
girl, yeah, you know, song, yeah, girl, girls, yeah, or whatever kind of stuff.
Reality Bites, when I had moved back to New York, I'm not going to sit here and masquerade as if I came back with my shit together. I came back to New York, like, drinking, smoking, doing drugs, you know what I mean? Like, really got into that for a good minute. Gained like 20, 30 pounds. It was like real crazy, just to be completely transparent, you know what I'm saying? And Reality Bites was kind of caught up in the middle of that. Like, when I would book sessions with people and then not show up. And like, you know, just like, all right, I can't make it anymore. And I finally, the first time I stopped doing it, literally the first time I stopped doing it, I had a show with Homeboy Sam and met a cat there. I met a lot of cats there, but this one kid was like, the way he came off, how he carried himself, I was like, oh, I want to see what this kid's music is about, because that was a pretty cool cat right there. And that ended up being Pace Rivers from the Clubhouse. And so that's when I stopped. But all that Reality Bites stuff was recorded in that time period. And so there were the sober moments, there were the really not sober moments, where it was just like, oh, I don't know where I'm at right now. So I was more focused when I came out of that.
What was it about the Clubhouse people that you identified with, other than, you know, maybe getting along with them personally? Like, what about their vibe, their aesthetic, whatever?
I think it was real dope that they wanted to work with me based on rap. But when I got there, we're talking about music that I kind of almost like, you know, you have friends, right? And you're like, you don't want to pull out the fact that you're like an amazing cook, because people are like, oh, you in the kitchen cooking and shit? Like, so you kind of, you know, you put all your fancy, you know, culinary stuff away that you're proud of, but like you throw it in the closet real quick and you're like, oh shit, don't let them see that. Don't let them see that. I felt like for a long time that's how I had been musically, because people were like, why wouldn't you just hit it with some hard rap shit? Even kids I grew up with were like, why would you do this doo-wop type shit? Why would you go on these like, la-da-da-da-da, why, you know, why would you take it there? That's not how you were raised. Like, you were raised on this shit. And I'm like, yeah, but not musically. And so I felt like I finally could bust out of my shell at the Clubhouse. I was talking to them about Crosby, Stills, and Nash. They're like, what the fuck do you Brooklyn rapper, like, know about Crosby, Stills, and Nash? And I'm like, oh, you know, I understand why you think that way, but I've always been like, felt like I can't think that way for a long time, and that's the shit I know very well. So
yeah,
it felt like I could bust out of my shell at the Clubhouse, and I was like, oh, I need to stick here and see what comes out of me and what comes out of these kids. And it's worked out.
That's awesome. So the Crosby, Stills, Nash in particular brings me to something else I wanted to ask, which I read at least in a few, I think in your bio and maybe a few other places, you talked about how, I think it was your dad, used to play the Woodstock,
yeah,
record all the time. So other than the Hendrix National Anthem, what's your favorite cut on there?
I think it was pretty crazy how Havens played Freedom.
Freedom!
Freedom, that was pretty crazy. I was like, you know, why does he keep changing his strings? My pop's like, he's breaking them. I was like, why would he do that? He was like, Don't ask so many questions. It's fine. You'll understand it. The Joe Cocker Beatles cover, obviously, did, which is the theme song for the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Five Little Help From Your Friends. That one, I remember asking, why is he behaving like that? Because he was doing the whole, you know?
Yeah.
And my pop spoke very plainly to me when I was little. He was like, drugs. And I was like, I don't get it. And he was like, yeah, drugs will make you do that. Drugs will make you behave funny. And I remember
that's
my
amazing
whole life
that
not
he was
getting.
So direct.
Yeah, I mean, and that helped me so much in life, to be quite honest. You know what I'm saying? He was just very direct. And in a way like that, you know? So he was just like, yeah, drugs will make you do some crazy stuff like that. And that's why he was doing that. And so I didn't get it until I was older, but I had the answer already.
Yeah.
Rap genius.
So, you know, you talked about the different side, musical sides of your personality. And I know we talked about this a little before off camera about Denisha and seeing this project where you're not only singing, but writing songs for another vocalist. You know, you have the recess thing we'll talk about in a minute, which is kind of jazzier. You know, the hard rap thing that you grew up on and sort of the doo-wop side of you and the side that loves classic rock. Can you ever see all or most of those sides being integrated into one project?
That's what I'm in the.
You're in the middle.
I'm in the white coat with that right now. I mean, well, we just cleaning some PQ dishes and seeing how the experiments go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But right now I'm trying to. Well, I'm not trying. Right now I'm recording. Excuse me. Where I'm doing all of it at once. And yeah, I feel like while some people are like, oh, why are you trying to do everything? I feel like, you know, sometimes if you were soft and you're trying to do gangster rap, at the end of the day, I'm sure there's a voice inside you that's like, you know, this isn't you. And so I feel like on a less extreme example of that, if I didn't do all this kind of stuff, that voice in my head's going off like, yo, why are you trying to be like one dimensional? You know, you're crawling at your skin right now to be able to hop in and do that. And because you can. And so I felt I did that for so long where I'm like, no, I can't do that now. So right now I'm in the middle of taking a stab at everything at once on a project.
Wow. And is that going to be under your name, or you haven't even thought that far ahead yet?
Man, I'll say right now, it's called Paradise.
That's the project name.
Yeah, it's called like a paradise, but like paradise, you know what I'm saying? So it's like roll the dice kind of thing. And so right now, that's being recorded under that. But the closest I've come to it other than that is, shit, I don't know, maybe the Denisha version. Mine is rap, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I know that, so in Weird Colors, to get a lyric-specific thing for a second, you had that line about, you know, you talk about, you know, how people look or what class they are is determined, you know, is used by the wider world to determine, I think you said, what kind of man is better.
What kind of man is better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was curious about this because people become aware of this at different times and in different circumstances. The idea that, like, you know, people are different races or different classes and different expectations and all that. Like,
yeah, that's great. It's
what
like
are your
cycle.
Expectations of that? What are your memories like becoming aware of this stuff as a kid?
Man, definitely, I'll say that first. It definitely works in cycles. You go from, it means nothing, to, oh, that's there, right? Like, oh, color, ethnicity, that's there, religion. And then it becomes like, oh, well, this is what I am. Then it becomes, this is the best. Then it becomes like, oh, shit, is this me? Then it becomes, oh, I'm kind of embarrassed that I was like that, going on that, I can't control that, or even worse, I'm embarrassed because I can't control that and that's where I was. And then you go through the cycle of, oh shit, this means everything. And you get that angry cycle, you know, like where you're like, oh, this, like, I'm sure for someone that's completely, you know, like full, you know, both parents are white and they're a white person, I'm sure that in that mindset, it's like, damn, I'm an open-minded individual. But just because of some shit that someone did 200 years ago, everyone thinks that I'm some fucking square racist bastard. You know what I mean? I say one thing like this and that. I'm sure that's how it is. And for me, it's like, oh, I'm mixed, but I came out, you know, tan. I came out brown. And so it's like, you know, I have to deal with things and I have to be like, oh, shit, this is why I'm treated this way. This is why I'm treated that way. You know what I mean? So I feel like...
So you get to see it from different angles than a lot of people.
Yeah, but I feel like it goes in cycles, was my point. You know, I feel like it goes in cycles. You go from all those feelings, but... It started for me when I was little. I was in Maryland visiting my older brother, and he was at college, in college, my older stepbrother, and we went to visit him, and we went to a magazine store. My brothers are Chinese. Both of my brothers are Chinese. And we went into a magazine store, me and the one that's around my age, and we were just looking at wrestling magazines, and the guy was like, gotta get the hell out. We were kids, and I was like, all right, we're just looking at a magazine. He's like, get out. And I just didn't get it. And I was like, okay, all right, we'll go. You know, I was trying not to, I was really confused at the moment. And when I got outside, they were like, what are you talking about? Like, get back in there. You guys begged to go to that store for 10 minutes. Like, go get your magazine. And we were like, the guy threw us out. And my pops is way lighter skin. And my brother, my older brother is Chinese, both in amazing shape at the time. So they both took issue with it and went back in that store by themselves. But they got it. And so when they came out and I heard them yelling things on the way out, getting, when they were pulling my pops out, I heard them yelling things like, you fucking hick. Like, I was like, hick. Like, what's up? Okay. Then to find out, oh, that's like, okay, that's what a hick is. Oh, so that means he was judging me. Oh, so right then was like the first time I ever dealt with it. And then another time at a jersey store, a guy told me to get out. And my mom's ran up in there. I was really young. And I was like, oh, okay, wow. Then you start getting like followed at stores and shit when you get a little older. And so I think like that's where it became the most present, though, when I was like seven, eight. I started noticing it. And then by the time I was 15, felt one way about it. By the time I was 19, felt a whole different way about it. And now you realize the bottom line is it's all green. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's what We Are Colors is about, you know? That was a really long...
No, that's great. I mean, that's why I asked.
Should have broke the weed out after. But, like, that's what it is.
You know? Yeah, I mean, you know, race and class are huge issues. Like, it's got to be a long answer.
You know, yeah.
How you experience them in your life is different for just about everyone, I think. You know, how you first become aware of them. The doo-wop thing, though, I wanted to talk, because you use that a lot in interviews, and I have to say, like, I didn't hear anything that I could identify as doo-wop on the first record.
Yeah, I know. That's the big thing. That's what I was getting at before. I mentioned the words doo-wop because I grew up on a lot of doo-wop. And once I did that, everyone was like, wait, what's he doing doo-wop
right now? I'm not hearing guys, on the corner singing harmonies or anything, you know?
A lot of it was written. I hadn't really... Because of who I was working with, not in particular one person, but across the board, I hadn't been very comfortable in trying to do things the way I know I could. So on Day Late, you hear a lot of like funny singing, where it's like, there's songs that were cut that didn't make it, but you know, say, I'm lifted way above the cloud, you know, to the cloud climbing joint.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm picturing like Frankie Valli, you know what I mean? Like Four Seasons type shit, and I'm picturing like barbershop quartet or like, you know, something like that, barbershop quartet that is. And I sang it a certain way that I felt was more funny, out of the thought of like, oh, maybe if I rock it this way, you know, people would be like, oh, he takes himself too seriously.
I would say it's self-protection, right?
You know what I'm saying? And that's just me being completely real, people. It's part of the reason why I just don't listen to that record much. Not that I know that people relate to it, and again, I appreciate that to death that they do it. But, yeah, I feel like that's where I was. And so some things that were really written completely in the doo-wop vein didn't come out on recording that way, because even though they were written for that, a lot of those songs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was a little timid about delivering.
Yeah. Rap Genius.
One more question about that record. On Al Through Gotham, I don't even know if you thought about that song in a while. They have that line, where little hustlers train and swap chains for sport.
Yeah.
Right? And it was the sport thing. Like, I just love this idea that, like, kids robbing each other are completely serious about it, are, like, caught up in some game or something that with rules they're not even really aware of.
Yeah, for sure. It's absolutely. And your mentor or whoever you look up to is like a coach. And, you know, just like in little kid sports, you have the dickhead coach that's only playing the star. And then you have the guy that's like, I don't care if we lose every game as long as every kid leaves this ring with a smile. You know what I'm saying? You do have those two coaches. You see those kids' coaches, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And so you have that one guy that's like, hurry up, Johnny, get off the field, what are you doing? And then you have the guy that's like, hey, time out, comes over and he's like, hey, man, you know, we really need you right now. You know, you have that coach, you feel me?
Yeah.
And so that's what I feel like it is. It's like sport. It's like you have these kids running around doing things that they're imitating. Someone said it great to me recently. that's not what they know. That's what they imitate up to a certain age. Then it becomes what they know. But when they walk around and how they talk at like age 6, age 7, it's just what they see, so they copy because they think that's how you're supposed to do it, you know? And so they do things that they feel like it's just, they don't realize it's a crime. They're more worried about what the person thinks that who they robbed or what the homies think of them for robbing somebody. They don't think about, you know, the other side of it where it's like, no, you're about to go to jail. That's still part of the game to them. They're just like, oh yeah, I gotta go to jail because I'm proving myself to them. You're like, no, man, you just lost all that, right? Not you. But you know, so.
And changing topics for a bit, you've rapped about your, you know, a daughter, son. Do you have any children?
I have a daughter.
You have a daughter.
I have a daughter.
How is well? Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Is that
much.
New?
She's a year old now.
Wow! Congratulations.
Yeah, I have a daughter now. Wow. That's how amazing to say.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. This might sound even silly to ask, but how has that changed your music? What you rap about? How you perform? Or how you deal with your career?
Oh, I'm very, as far as creatively, unapologetic. I mean, now, it's cool that we're sitting here right now talking about all these different phases of life that I've gone through, right?
Yeah.
And it's cool to sit down and look at it, you know, because sometimes you don't take the time to do that. But when you have a child, you have to start thinking pragmatically. And have to think about, oh shit, this is something I'm going to have to answer for. Even if it's just a conversation one day, you know, over lunch, I'm going to have to answer for why I was doing that and why I did that. And it took away all inhibition as far as my creative side, and it made me also unapologetic. For a long time, like I said, I felt guilty if I was writing something, what I was singing, or if I was doing that. Now, in plain English, I do not give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? Like, straight up. Someone got a problem with it? Like, deal with it. Look in the mirror, talk it out, homie. You know what I mean? Like, deal with it on your own time. Go ahead, do you know, this, that, and the third. I'm lucky people have been receptive, but that's what it's been. It's like having a child is like, I'm gonna have to answer for this one day. And if I bend this way and do something that's really not me, or don't do something, they won't understand. Oh, yeah, you know, I do this and this too to my daughter, right? Imagine. And she's like, oh, but why did you do that? Oh, because other people, like, oh, so other people, what they think matters. And so you have to, like, it makes me, at least, if you're a decent human with a decent brain on, you know, your shoulders, it makes me think, okay, I'm going to have to answer for all this. And so I'm going to stand by everything I do. And so if you don't understand it, I don't care. I do. And so I'll be able to explain it to my child. You know what I'm saying? That's how I do.
Nice. And can you tell me a little about the Recess Project? Kind of more jazzy, or like overtly jazzy, even in like the instrumentation, than some of your past stuff, right?
Yeah, it's a live, it's at the Clubhouse. Recess is me and the Clubhouse, which I'm kind of like just part of itself now, but this was when we first met. So it's like 8 people. I'm trying to count while I talk, but it's like 8 people, I guess, you know, all different musicians and producers coming together and just making, you know, a mix of music. Without, you know, kind of labeling it, just a mix. There was a lot of rap on it, a lot of singing on it. That's where I first started saying, nope, I'm doing different stuff, like, I'm doing what I want to do. And so, yeah, it's this great collective. The Clubhouse is a place that, it's a Victorian-style mansion in the outer region of Flatbush in Brooklyn. Let's say that. Some people call it Ditmas Park. And musicians live there and come to work there, so it's a nice studio. And that's where we record, that's where we've done it all, and that's where Recess was born, you know, working in that clubhouse together with all these people that do film, photo, music, everyone doing something at, you know, at some point, it just came together, and a lot of them happen to have jazz backgrounds, so it's naturally a bit more jazzy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the Denisha and Scene project, what's it like? So for people who might not know, that's you and a singer. Right, and you're singing and not rapping, or hardly rapping at all on that.
Yeah, well, no, I don't rap at all. The album comes out next month, but I don't rap at all on the whole record. I wrote all the lyrics on the album that either one of us sing.
And that's what I wanted to ask about. What was it like writing for a voice that's not yours?
Oh, it's amazing, because it's a lot of them are written for mine. But it's like, I'm not one of those people that's going to push the envelope. Like, I'll push the envelope, but I'm not going to try to push it to the point where I'm like, yo, I need to do that. That's got to be me, so it's got to be different. it's like, no, you know, that's a really great song, but it would sound better if someone that sings even better than you sings it. And so it worked out a couple of times, and we were like, yeah, we got to do this record. We got to do an album. So it's been very easy because she's very open to just singing what I wrote for myself kind of thing. And I keep her in mind, you know, but she's been singing like, you know, we just have that kind of chemistry where I can write for myself, and when she sings it, it's beautiful. And she convinced me to sing some of them myself, so that's the crazy thing. But like I said, you know, I got to answer to my daughter and nobody else. You know what I mean?
That's awesome. I look forward to hearing the full record.
Does
it have the title yet? Or?
Yeah, His and Hers. His and Hers. Nice. You know what I'm saying? His and Hers.
That makes sense. It's great. And you're starting to do some producing yourself, right? Yeah. I know you're stuff for Homeboy Sandman and Anthem and whatever.
Yeah, I produced like 90% of that, 90% of the record with Anisha. And I'm producing a lot. I'm producing an album for Science. Yeah, and I'm doing my own stuff as well. So producing my own stuff is something that I was, again, it's one of those things where I'm like, all right, I'm not going to act like I can't do this. This is what I've been wanting to do, so I'm just going to do it right now.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like? I mean, what kind of stuff do you think about when producing as opposed to rapping on a track? You know, you sit down in a studio and you're like, okay, I have to make a beat or like I have to rap on this. Like, what kind of things?
No, that's the beautiful thing about it is that rapper mindset can kind of leave for a little while. I'm not trying to shit on the rapper mindset, but I mean like that this is what I'm working with. Mindset is gone because you sit down with nothing. And most of my production right now, 99.9% of my production is sample free. And so you sit down with nothing and you start with something, you know, and then yeah, you start with something and then you continue with something and then you continue something, you know, and you don't have rules. It just goes. So when I sit down to produce, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to mess with some drums real quick. And it just goes from there. Whereas sit down to rap, it's like, all right, I want to write some cold shit right now. And I want to talk about this because this beat is doing this and that. When you don't have that to start with, it's just, you know, it's from scratch.
That's awesome. So you're playing a lot of the stuff?
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of microcorg, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of microcorg,
yeah.
Straight up. And drum machines and things like that, you know, programming and stuff like that. That's why it sounds... I'm trying to build my own little sound, you know what I'm saying? And that's it. And so I bring in, like, you know, Jay Jennings plays keys. I'll play some, like, Baby Grand and stuff on it, but Jay Jennings will come and play keys or trumpet, you know what I mean? And then I'll go in and chop that up. But right now I've just been sticking away from samples.
Okay. Right. But you'll sample stuff that other people play?
We'll sample ourselves, basically. Yourself. Like, if I sit down and play something, say, on a stand-up piano or whatever, mic it, or, you know, shaking quarters in a can, whatever the case may be,
yeah.
Sample that, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I keep it sample-free as far as from now on, because I used to sample other people, but right now I just want to see what happens when you have nothing and you, you know, really produce something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, winding up to one or two more things about backboards. We talked about it on your verified Rap Genius account.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something in that tune and a couple others as well. You set Jay up as this kind of, like, icon to a lot of Brooklyn kids.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a father figure for those that have none in the house. You know what I'm saying? He gives you advice growing up. He tells you things that... You're like, oh, that's right. It's really like having this kind of Geppetto, but like this real slick Geppetto. You know what I'm saying? And I know people were like, oh, he's saying he's praying to Jay-Z, but it's not at all praying to Jay-Z. It's about him being a father figure. And it also at the same time is mentioning how people, or it's like alluding to the fact that how people pray to him, basically. So it's just a little double tongue.
Yeah.
Rap Genius.
And, so that's incredible. And so what do you have coming up now? Obviously the Denisha and Scene album. What on the anything on the rap side?
Yeah, I'm doing some rap stuff with Science. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some stuff with the homies YC the Cynic, Socon, and Blue and Anthem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And songs.
These are collaborations or
yeah, some of them are like, you know, a collaboration. EPs and stuff like that, like, you know, Holy Order stuff with Socon, YC, and Science.
That's one project.
That's just one collective.
One
so
collective.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, like, yeah, I've been rapping. I'm not dropping it right now, but I've been rapping a lot. but I just haven't been releasing it. I don't feel the need to like keep feeding the insatiable beast. Like it's never gonna get full. And so I'd rather just take my time and make sure that it comes out the way I want it to.
Yeah, there's this whole dynamic of like a mixtape a week.
I'm definitely, that's not me. You know what I'm saying? That's really not me. Like I give things time to breathe now so people can really understand them. Because me telling them a month later, oh, now take this, is to say, forget that.
Right. The first thing wasn't worth paying attention to for very long.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, I can't even pay attention to it. Why should you? And so right now, I used to be more like, all right, let's get something out. And now I'm like, no, I'm going to let this Denisian project breathe. I have a beautiful little thing we're working on called St. Valentine with Andrew Thomas Reed from the Clubhouse. Pace and Aaron will be working on the visual end. And I have that beautiful little piece, which is a mix of a whole bunch of different stuff.
And that's a movie or what? I mean, how are you?
It's going to be there'll be a movie probably with it, but it'll be a movie with the soundtrack. And I'm working on the soundtrack right now and then building the scenes at the same time. But I'm really excited about that St. Valentine project and Paradise. You know, I can name off 10, but I don't want to. Again, I'm focusing on each one individually right now.
Right.
And so I don't want to name off 10 and then have people be like, well, you said da-da-da.
Right. When's that one coming?
Like, I promise everything that I'm involved in right now, every single thing will see the light of day. I will not shelve anything because I feel very passionately about all the projects that I'm involved in. But I'm going to do it at my time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not in a rush. And so they'll all see the light of day. Can't wait.
Okay. Well, we can't wait either, and we look forward to your Rap Genius explanations on all of them.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Yeah, appreciate it.
That was our talk with Scene. If you liked what you heard on Outside the Lines, visit us on iTunes. From there, you can subscribe so that you never miss an episode. You can also leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get awesome guests like Scene. Make sure to join us in 2 weeks for our next episode of Outside the Lines, where we'll bring you some live conversations we had at South by Southwest. Outside the Lines is created and written by Sean Sotero, a.k.a. Same Old Sean.
Drugs will make you do that. Drugs will make you behave funny.
It's produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
What, you think you better? Because you popped out a pussy in Detroit, you popped out a pussy in Afghanistan, you know what I mean?
Our show's intern is Sunny Kahara.
When you have a child, you have to start thinking pragmatically.
Additional work by Gavin Matthews.
Bottom line is it's all green.
Our music is by Psionic.
I want to write some cold shit right now.
And the webmaster of the upcoming OutsideTheLinesPodcast.com is Paul Dice.
And let me do all that, and I went picking my diploma. And then, yeah, the next morning I was on the plane.
Join us in 2 weeks for more Outside the Lines. This is Same Old Sean signing off from the Rap Genius Ranch at South by Southwest 2013.
Stay if you want or
yeah,
whatever.
You're the cool guy, right?
Yeah, but I can always edit stuff out.